It's Tuesday, the 26th of January, 2016. Happy birthday to Gerald Green, Vince Carter, and Montrezl Harrell. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and LizzieXO. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like LizzieXO, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can be a sponsor of the podcast for a day. Also, of course, a big shout out goes out to Moneyball.com.au, Australia's best and New Zealand's best daily fantasy sports site. So if you're in Australia or you're in New Zealand, had a few conversations with a couple of guys in New Zealand today. Make sure you're joining in Moneyball and getting involved in all the DFS action. Okay, today we are going to be talking about a crazy, crazy Monday in the NBA. We're going to be previewing Tuesday's action. We're going to be doing a little bit of dynasty talk. And of course, I say we because I am joined by the venerable Seth Klein. Seth, how are you going?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
It's good to have you back on. I'm enjoying the shirt that you're wearing there.
Yeah, it's my... Porzingod shirt, repping my Knicks.
Very,
right? And our hope for the future.
Very apt. I'm still waiting on my Porzingis jersey to arrive.
Porzingis.
Hopefully it comes soon, and then we can go matching Porzingis on the podcast. But Seth, there was tons of NBA today. It was a public holiday here in Australia. We're celebrating Australia Day, so everybody in Australia got to stay home and watch the games. And the big game of the night was a bit of a fizzer. I think that's fair to say. With the Warriors destroying the Spurs. But if you happened to have NBA League Pass and flicked over to the other game, you would have seen the winner of the monstrous line of the night, and that was DeMarcus Cousins, who was, I think it's fair to say, ludicrous. He scored over 100 points in his last two games. That sums it up, Seth. He had, what did he have? He had a lot of points. I'm just trying to find it in front of me now. He had 56 points. He had 12 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks. He hit a 3. He went 21 of 30 from the field, and he went 13 of 16 from the free throw line. He fouled out as well, so there was possibly a little bit more there for Boogie. He is in just ridiculous form. How good is this guy?
He's very good. He's the best center in the league. And clearly. I actually just tweeted out his January stats. Obviously, the last two games are incredible, but overall, in 12 games this month, 34.4 points, 13.6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.7 steals, a block, and 1.5 threes. And he's making those 1.5 threes on 46.2% from beyond the arc. It's just incredible right now. He's, I think he's still behind Steph Curry for the month as on Basketball Monster, but just an incredible player, and he's only getting better, I think.
And the thing that was dragging him down to start the season, and everyone, I copped a lot of tweets and forum posts about, you guys stuffed up with Boogie, I wasted my first round pick on him, he's a bum, he's a dud. It's because his shot wasn't falling. Over the last month, Seth, he's hitting 51% of his shots from the field, which was something that he was at 44 to start the season. He's at 51 for the last month. He's up to 46 on the season. He's improved both those numbers, and he is just destroying worlds at the moment. The addition of Willie Cauley-Stein back to the starting lineup has made him even better somehow. I'm not really sure how that's happening, but he is better with Cauley-Stein there. His last 2 weeks, you said January, the last 2 weeks with Cauley-Stein back, he's averaging 36 and 14. With a triple one, over a 3, a steal, and a block a game at 53 and 74% with his field goal and free throw percentage. He is just ludicrous. And the other day, ESPN had an article up on their fantasy homepage with the headline being, is DeMarcus Cousins still a top 10 fantasy player? When I first saw that a couple of weeks ago, I yelled at the screen, of course he is. What are you talking about? Of course he's a top 10 player. And I think that's been fairly clearly proven recently. He is as good as it gets when it comes to big men. Would you rather have him or Anthony Davis in a fantasy league at the moment?
I mean, with the concussion for Davis and his injuries adding up, and just I think Cousins is up. I mean, yeah, Cousins started off in a rut, the shooting. So He got off to a poor start there, but I think if you take them in a vacuum now, like if you start fresh now, I'd probably take Cousins right now.
Yeah, well, look, it'd be close, but there's you're right that we're going to talk about Anthony Davis in a little bit of time, but Cousins is outperforming him at the moment. The waiver wire line of the night, Seth, is a guy that when you look at Yahoo's ownership percentage, he's owned in approximately 0% of leagues. So fair to say not many people would have had the benefit of owning Troy Daniels in his performance in this double overtime game. He played 31 minutes off the bench, had 28 points, including 8 triples, had 7 rebounds, and went 10 of 15 from the field. Now, he didn't do a huge amount else, but that's basically who Troy Daniels is. Now, he's clearly benefiting from Nick Batum and Jeremy Lamb being out, and over his last 4 games, he's averaging 15 points with 4 triples a game and 3 rebounds, and that makes him someone that you could have streamed in standard leagues, but there's pretty much no chance that he's going to have any value beyond when Batum comes back, right?
He's a guy that I wouldn't get too excited about. Not only Batum, but Jeremy Lamb is out as well. And he's making the best of his opportunity. But he's going to find himself going back to playing under 10 minutes or even less a game once Batum and Lamb are back. There's a lot of players out right now for the Hornets. They're really hurting. So he's filled in nicely, but I wouldn't go crazy for him off the waiver wire.
It's just a deeper league guy. Like you're in 16, 18 team leagues, you add him, you see what happens. Look, he could cut into Jeremy Lamb's minutes when Lamb returns, because Lamb, he started off the season with a ridiculously unsustainable shooting percentage, which has dropped off, and he has been pretty much bad for the last 2 months. So he could cut into that because he adds to the ethos of what they do, and that's space the floor now, and that's all he does. But that can be a real weapon for that team. So in a deeper league, he may still have some long-term value, but yeah, there's no need to drop anyone good to go and add him in a standard sort of format. The young gun of the night, I think it's pretty obvious who this one is, and it, as is most nights that he plays, Karl Anthony Towns was fantastic for the Timberwolves against the Cavs. He played 30 minutes, went 26 and 11, had 4 assists, 1 steal and a block, and great percentages, 11 of 16 and 4 of 5 from the free throw line. Where are you taking him in drafts next year?
He's, man, he's definitely, I think he's a top 25 pick next year.
Absolutely.
Maybe even higher, but I don't know if he's quite a first, he's right on the border of that, the second round right there for me.
Yeah, he's around that, say, 12 to 16 range, I reckon, at this point. And I wouldn't be shocked if someone grabbed him in the top 10, because he's currently ranked inside the top 20 for the season. And you'd have to think there's some improvement. And that's in less than 30 minutes a game, mind you. So he gets an extra 2 or 3 minutes a game next season. Where does he go from there? And it's 16 and 9.5, 1.8 blocks. That's still impressive. And then his last 4 games, he's averaged 32 minutes. He's at 22, 12.5, 2.3 blocks. Like, they're crazy numbers. They're top 10 numbers. And he's definitely got top 10 upside. And by the end of next season, it's not going to be a shock to see him in the top 10. He is as good as any rookie we've seen come in, I don't even know, in a very long time. I had pretty high expectations for him. He's smashed them by hundreds and hundreds of percent. He has been that good. Is there anyone who can take Rookie of the Year off him, even your boy on the T-shirt there, Porzingis?
No, there's no. Karl Anthony, he has the Rookie of the Year locked up already.
He definitely has. The dud of the night, Derrick Rose for me. He played 13 minutes before leaving with back and hamstring issues. 4 points and 1 assist. The injuries, we know they're always an issue with him. He was starting to look good as well. But this is just it's turning into a sad story with Derrick Rose. And yes, he's done a few things that don't necessarily garner him a great sympathy. I think that might be fair to say with the way he handles the media. But he's just a complete mess at the moment and a completely different guy. Seth, this is going to keep him out for time. I don't know how long, but it's going to keep him out for some amount of time. What are you doing with Derrick Rose?
I mean, he's been improved over the last month or so as far as the shooting goes, but he's still not a guy that he's not hitting threes the way he used to in his career. He's not getting steals. He's not getting assists. And, and the shooting is still bad overall. He's a hard guy to own in fantasy at all. I think the last Last time I had checked, it was about a week ago. He was outside of the top 150 over the last month. So even with the improvements, he's still a bad player to own in fantasy. Add the injuries to that. Put him on your IR, but this is not a player that you want to hold up a bench spot with if it's determined he's going to be out for more than a week, which it looks like he will be.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that completely. Now, Seth, before we move in to look at these games in a little bit more detail, I'm just going to take a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be back. All right, we're back in business now, Seth. Let's get into these games and talk about them. There were how many? There was 9 games on the NBA. We'll go through them one by one and see what we can get out of it. If you're watching on the video, you can see it on the screen. Just make sure that everyone can see that perfectly. There we go. The first game was the Timberwolves and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Zach LaVine finally got a bigger role. He played 30 minutes and went 21-4-6 with 2 triples and a steal. But for me, I'm just worried that that is coinciding with the fact that Kevin Martin was out with a wrist injury. What are you doing with LaVine? He's got the potential to be a top 100 player. He's also got a coach who just seems to refuse to play him and other good players on this team. So I'm not dropping anyone good to get him. What are you doing with LaVine after this?
Sam Mitchell's the new Byron Scott. It's like, or Lionel Hollins or whoever, we've talked about the last couple of years. It's Tayshaun Prince had 19 first half minutes. Had 29 minutes, and you're playing Muhammad 26, Jang 25. I mean, it's almost ridiculous at this point that what Mitchell is doing, and it's not like they're tanking; they're winning some ball games. So it's a weird situation there. But as far as LaVine goes, I do think there's a chance Martin gets traded. Also, this wrist injury seems to keep cropping up. He had it last year. Yeah. He had surgery last year, I believe. It kept him out over a month. So as long as he's out, there's value. And if he's traded, there's value. But just don't know if he's one of those players that unless you're sitting pretty, like top 4 in your league, and you're looking like you're going to make the playoffs, I don't think LaVine is a guy that you necessarily have to stash. Certainly, you can't afford to wait for the opportunity that may not even come if you're on the cusp of the playoffs. He puts up decent numbers, but doesn't get a lot of steals, doesn't get a lot of threes, doesn't shoot well a lot of games. There's scoring upside, there's some assists, but I don't think he's a mustache player unless you're in a deeper league or you have a comfortable situation in the standings.
Yeah, I agree. I have no faith in Mitchell being able to do the right thing and give him minutes and play him alongside Rubio like he did in big stretches tonight. You can add him and see how it pans out. I'm not confident. Andrew Wiggins had 20 points and not a lot else. 1 rebound, 1 assist, 1 threes. The 2 steals and the block is nice. The percentages were nice, but he's still going to be mired in that back end value because of his lack of ability in the other areas, I guess it's fair to say. Gorgui Dieng played 26 minutes, 13-6 with 2 steals, and that's probably his most promising game in quite a while. One thing I'm never going to understand is why I go out and say, yeah, it's time we're going to increase Nikola Pekovic's minutes and then play him the lowest minutes he's played all season. He played 13 for 4 points and 2 rebounds. Why you'd start him next to Karl-Anthony Towns again remains completely baffling to me. Just put Jeng and Towns together. It's pretty straightforward. Or put Muhammad and Towns together. Put someone there that's not Tayshaun Prince or not Nikola Pekovic. As for Jeng, he's still a real borderline 12-team league guy. His opportunities seem very hampered by what Mitchell is doing. I don't know if that's going to change. I hope it is, and if you're sitting comfortably, he's someone to hold on to because he does have top 60 upside, but my confidence level with him is not all that high. On the Cavs side of things, LeBron 25-4-9, a triple one, a nice night for there, and Tristan Thompson replaced Timofey Mozgov back in the starting lineup, 19 points and 12 rebounds for Thompson. Do not count on Tristan Thompson to score 19 points very often going forward. He is solely a source of field goal percentage and rebounds, and that's about it. Is he someone that you own in 12-team leagues, Seth?
I personally don't own him. Yeah, but yeah, he's ownable if you need rebounds.
Yeah, that it's very, very team-specific. Matthew Dellavedova, in the last game, he seemed to be shunted a little bit out of the rotation in Tyronn Lue's first game with Mo Williams getting more run. Now, Williams only played the 5 minutes here, and Daly got back to 25 minutes, and he looked really good. 18, 4, and 7 with four triples and a steal. And I think a lot of people would be surprised to see that Dellavedova is inside the top 150 this season. I don't think that means he's a 12-team league guy, but anyone in 14 teams and above, he has to be owned in all those leagues. He's sort of carved out this role, and hopefully he stays in this role as the backup point guard, because he can produce this. Look, this is probably the peak of what he can do, but the aggregate of what he's done this season has enough to warrant ownership in 14-team leagues, I think. What's your opinion on Dellavedova?
Yeah, I agree. He needs to be owned in 14 and up, because rarely can you get a backup point guard that's going to put up assist numbers he does. Like you said, he's not going to score 18 points, but he'll hit a couple threes. He's been getting steals, and he'll get you a handful of assists, and I think that's valuable in deeper leagues, and certainly as a streamer in shallower leagues.
Yep, definitely. Kevin Love went 11-6. He had a couple of steals and a three, and Kyrie had 17, 9-4 in just 28 minutes for him. He's still sort of getting his minutes back up, but we're expecting a pretty big fly home from him at some point this season. J.R. Smith with a nice night. His shooting wasn't great, 3 of 14, 11 points, 2 triples, but added 2 assists, 3 steals, and a block, and he's still a guy that should be owned in 12-team leagues. The next game is the Boston Celtics and the Washington Wizards. Isaiah Thomas, a big game for him. This is a huge win for the Celtics, so you'll see the minutes all suppressed for most of the big names. Thomas went 23, 4, and 9 with a steal and 2 threes. Probably the biggest takeaway for me is the play of Marcus Smart recently. He played 32 minutes, went 13, 6, and 5, had 2 threes, 2 steals. And Seth, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point over his career, maybe the next 2 to 3 seasons, that Marcus Smart is a guy who averages 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 threes, and 2 steals. I think that's the sort of player he can be. What's your take on him now? Should he be owned in every league?
Yeah, he should be owned in every league. I'm not really talking about 10-team league, but 12-team leagues, standard leagues, needs to be owned because, like you said, he has that ability to rack up steals, hit some threes. Not a big assist guy for a point guard, but as you see tonight, he'll give you a handful. He's had triple-double this year. He can get rebounds. Not going to shoot too well, but he gives a little bit of everything, and that's something that can be valuable.
His last 2 weeks, he's playing 29 minutes a game. It's 11 points, which that's not great, but a 3-6 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.5 steals, half a block is really useful. And yeah, you've got to be able to deal with the percentages. They're not completely crippling. Yeah, he's at 35 on the season, but that's only at 9 attempts, and he has improved it over the last 2 weeks to be at 40%, and he's at 70% from the free throw line, which again is not crippling on a small amount of attempts. I think he has to be owned. He's providing great value and doing things in categories which might not look as sexy because his scoring is not as high. As for the big men, Kelly Olynyk 13, 4, and 2, Amir Johnson 4, 5, and 2, and Jared Sullinger 7, 6, and 1. There's going to be issues with these guys all along. Out of those three guys, Seth, Sullinger, Olynyk, and Amir Johnson, which player do you own, or do you not own any of them in standard leagues? Do you think none of them should be owned? Should all of them be owned? Who's your preference?
I think right now the safest player out of those is Sullinger. Despite tonight, he was getting pretty consistent minutes. It's just tough. I don't think Amir Johnson needs to be owned. I think he's really cooled off over the last week. He's not getting steals the way he used to in the past. He's not blocking a ton of shots. They don't really need him for that. So I don't think he needs to be owned. Olynyk, this is a tough situation. I think in 12-team leagues, I think Kelly Olynyk needs to be owned, whether or not you personally need to own him whoever you are. But he shouldn't be on any waiver wires because he can knock down a ton of threes and do so from the center position. But, we saw yesterday, I think he only had 16 minutes yesterday. It's going to be a muddled front court, but Olynyk and I think and Sullinger do need to be owned. But of course, if they're like your worst player, feel free to drop them for a guy if you need to play someone tomorrow type of thing.
Yeah. Now, I think Olynyk would surprise a lot of people. He's only playing 21 minutes a game this season, but he's ranked 105th, and it's very similar to another guy we're going to talk about later on. Seth, but he, even in limited minutes, is still, you have to consider ownable. And then for some reason Brad Stevens woke up and realized that Olynyk is their best big man and played him 28 minutes a night, then we're talking top 60 sort of potential. So I like him probably the best out of those group. But yeah, I agree, Sullinger and Olynyk. I own Johnson in one league and I'm really going to be considering moving on from him. But it really depends on need. Do you need a high field goal percentage? Because Johnson's the only one who's going to give you that out of these guys. Other guys like Sullinger and Olynyk, they're probably not going to, but they're going to help in other areas. It's all dependent on the way that your team is going. Jay Crowder had 11 points in 28 minutes. Not his greatest night. And Avery Bradley, 11, 2, and 3 in 26. I said the game was over in this one pretty quickly. On the Wizards side of things, Otto Porter returned and looked good, returning 15 and 6 with 2 threes and 2 assists. If he is available, you need to make sure he is owned. And John Wall, the last time he played against the Celtics, I was very, don't use John Wall in DFS. The Celtics are going to shut him down. And he posted about 73 FanDuel points, and I look like a massive dickhead. Today, yeah, this is how I expected to go. 8 points, 10 assists, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. He got shut down, and that's fair enough, because the Celtics' backcourt is fantastic defensively. So Wall had a bit of an off game, to be anticipated. Brad Beal. What do you do with Bradley Beal? He lasted 9 minutes before going out with a bloody nose issue, and now is dealing with a concussion. He's going to be on a minutes limit for most of the season. The thing with him, I don't think you can drop him, but I don't think he even gets close to 30 minutes for the rest of this season. And there's going to be these little strange things that happen to him, it appears, for most of the year. What do we do with Beal?
I agree. You can't drop him, but, I mean, if you could trade him for 75 cents on a dollar, I'd do so. I mean, this is probably something you should have been exploring months ago. I mean, he was on my do not draft articles preseason, so hopefully you didn't even draft him and you didn't stick yourself in this boat with his injury issues. But when healthy, he's a fun player, but when healthy, he's not, in my opinion. I mean, I think he has opportunity if he can figure out this leg issue to be a good player, but his numbers don't blow you away. He can score, he can hit threes, but he's not doing a lot much else. So to ride him out through the whole season, I don't know. I don't think his upside is quite there with the minutes restrictions you talked about. So if you can trade him, for a healthy guy that can put up numbers and send him to a team that thinks, still recognizes that name, the Beal brand name, then do so.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see how. I think he'll struggle to be a top 100 player by the end of the season, but it's very hard to drop him given his upside. Jared Dudley had 15 points with a couple of threes in 31 minutes, while Nene only played the 25 minutes as the starter, going 8-5 with a couple of steals. Both those guys are tough to own in 12-team leagues. I did say that you can own Nene in 12-team leagues as a short-term thing. He's worth adding a streaming spot because he can be productive in limited minutes, but it's not going to last very long at all. So if you're looking for long-term plays, he's definitely not that guy. The next game, Seth, the Miami Heat and the Chicago Bulls. There was still no Hassan Whiteside, but we did have Beno Udrih return and Luol Deng return. Dwayne Wade had 28, 7, and 5 in a pretty stock-standard Dwayne Wade-y sort of game. And Amari Stoudemire started in place of Hassan Whiteside and went 8 and 10 in 26 minutes. But there's nothing really actionable with Stoudemire for fantasy. Whiteside will likely be back for the next game. Bosch, 18 and 7. There's not really anything that's worth looking at here, except if you did pick up Beno Udrih or Tyler Johnson with the injury to Goran Dragic. Dragic is either going to be back for tomorrow's game or back for Friday's action. So dropping one of those two guys to get someone else onto your squad is probably the smart thing to do. What's your take on Luol Deng? He went 9-4 with a 1-1. I don't think he should be owned in 12-team leagues. How do you view him?
No, I think he's more of a streamer still. He doesn't have any more big games left in him. He's playing actually big minutes over the last week or so, but the injuries are there. He's just not doing enough. He's just not putting up stats, and you can't count on him every night.
Yep, exactly. Not much else to really talk about on the Heat there. So I think Gerald Green had 9 points in his 25 minutes. He's not a standard league guy though. On the Bulls, Pau Gasol went 19 and 17 with a couple of blocks, a big night from him. And with Derrick Rose limited, Aaron Brooks played 33 minutes and went 13, 2 and 6 with 3 steals and 2 threes. He is the guy to own if you're looking for a short-term ad with Rose's injury, especially with Heinrich out and Etuan Moore dealing with a hamstring problem. Aaron Brooks has shown he can be productive in the past. Don't expect him to blow you away, but He's a nice short-term add, I think, if you're looking to replace some point guard production. If you own one of these guys who's injured, what's your thoughts on Brooks?
It's inconsistent. I actually, the last time Rose got hurt, I went to the wire and I grabbed Aaron Brooks. He had that like 29-point game. Sure enough, the next two games, I think he had 5 points and 7 points or something like that. So he's worth an ad, I guess, see what happens. But I wouldn't expect a ton from him. He can knock down some threes and put up some points, though.
Yep, exactly. Nikola Mirotic played 22 minutes, had 15 and 8, a triple one. This is exactly what Mirotic can do, and that's why I wish that he would be able to get 30 minutes a night. He is still on the season. He's only playing 24 minutes a game, and he's still ranked inside the top 115, which is fantastic considering how poor he's been perceived to play at times, which he has at times. He's also played fantastically at other times, but he is up and down. He is still someone that has to be owned in all leagues, in my opinion. Do you have a differing thought on that?
No, I mean, I've been getting Mirotic questions all season long. I think you still got to hold on to him because that upside is there. And don't let a few bad games make you drop him, and then someone picks him up, and then all of a sudden Taj Gibson gets traded or whatever, and he's playing huge minutes and doing well. So ride him out if you can, and hope he keeps having games like tonight and the one he played the other day as well.
One more reminder that Bobby Portis for standard leagues, it's not happening. He played 7 minutes here. His biggest contribution in the box score was 4 fouls. He had 2 points and 2 rebounds, and I love Bobby Portis. I think he's going to be a really good player. I love his potential. I love his energy, but it's just not happening this season. He's not playing above Mirotic. He's not playing above Gibson. He's not playing above Gasol, and he's not getting enough minutes to be standard league relevant. And if you think maybe a trade is coming, I think a trade for the Bulls is actually pretty unlikely at this point, given the Noah injury, because they had excess front court depth. Now they don't. Now they're sort of right where they need to be with three top-class guys, top-class-ish, Gasol, Mirotic, and Gibson, and a rookie backup. If they trade Gibson, they're going to run Gasol and Mirotic with Portis as their sole backup big men. There's not enough depth there. So Portis is going to be the fourth guy. It's going to take an injury for him to be relevant, and I don't think that you can really hold a guy banking on that and hoping it happens. It's not going to happen. Also, another quick reminder that Tony Snell is bad. The next game, the Orlando Magic and the Memphis Grizzlies. If you dropped Evan Fournier with his move to the bench, I think that may have been a little bit hasty. He played 35 minutes and went 16-3-5 with 4 triples and a steal. He's a top 100 player this season. I think he needs to be owned because, let's be honest, the wing depth in Orlando off the bench is pretty minimal. So he'll be a guy who's still going to play his 30 minutes most nights and is quite useful. As for the rest of their guys, big game from Nick Vucevic, 16-14 with 2 blocks. Toby Harris went 16-4-3. Lord Alfred Payton went 14-2-3. Aaron Gordon played 24 minutes in the start and went 10-9 in a block. And all of those guys should be owned. Do you agree on Gordon that he has to be owned everywhere?
Yeah, I do. I'm still a little skeptical, though. I mean, the upside's there.
It may not pan out. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, it may not pan out. We know Skiles is a moron, and there is other front court players there. But I don't think the other categories that he has the potential to provide are quite there yet. And I think that's the issue. I think right now he's still a points and rebounds guy. He'll hit the occasional three, but he doesn't block shots, doesn't really get steals. It's basically, you're just going to get him for, 10 points a game, maybe 8 rebounds. I don't know how valuable that is. Of course, it's worth owning to see if that improves and he keeps getting the minutes he's been getting. But there's just not a lot else to like there at this stage of his career.
Yeah, I think it's just own and hold for probably until All-Star and see what happens. And see if he's going to just play 24 minutes a night and go 10-9 a game, then there's no point there. But give him a couple of weeks and see how that pans out. Victor Oladipo was terrible. 5-4-6 on 1 of 10 shooting. He'd been really good up until this game. I don't think this is any sort of sign of anything to come. I think it was just a bad night at the office because it's 4 rebounds and 6 assists. If he hits 5 of 10 shots, we're talking a 13-4-6, and it's an okay sort of night. But 1 of 10, it crippled what he was able to do. What are your thoughts on Oladipo at the moment?
Yeah, just a bad game. I mean, like you said, he was rolling the last two, so I wouldn't look too much into this.
Yep. Onto the Grizzlies side of things, of course, Jeff Green comes out of nowhere for 30-8 with 2 threes, 2 steals, and a block. He is so borderline 12 team to me. He's on and off rosters. He's not a must-own. He's like, yeah, I'll add him. Yeah, he's going to do bad. He's just all over the place. I'm not rushing to grab Jeff Green based on a 30-point outbreak against the Magic, are you?
No.
That's the correct answer. Tony Allen played 40 minutes in this overtime game, 9-12 with 4 steals. He's not someone I want to own in 12-team leagues at this point. That's a really good line, and he did have a few good performances, but there's just too many wing guys there, and I don't know. That's what bothered me in this game, that Tony Allen played 40 minutes and Matt Barnes played 18. That was a bit...
I don't mind Allen in roto leagues, because I think he does provide nice steals and isn't going to kill you everywhere else. So I don't mind him as a bottom of your roster guy in roto leagues, but in head-to-head, he's certainly not a must-own.
Matt Barnes moved back to the bench for Allen to start. I'm still holding Barnes if I own him, but one more game with this sort of rotation and he can go. And Zach Randolph played 34 minutes, which is the most he's played in a few weeks, 18 and 13 for him. Is he a must-own player? Because to me, he's not. That's impressive, but he's been not impressive, basically.
Yeah, I mean, again, he's like Aaron Gordon Sr. I mean, it's a lot of, you know, the rebounds and points, but it's just not a lot else right there. He's borderline. I mean, look, I wouldn't keep Zach Randolph in the wire. I mean, there's got to be a team that needs a guy like that in a 12-team league. But do you have to make a trade to get him? No. I think this is as good as you're going to get from him, unfortunately.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Marc Gasol had a really well-rounded line. 17-5-5, 4 steals and 2 blocks, while Mike Conley went 12-6-9 with 2 steals and a block. That was his best game since returning from that Achilles issue. The next game is the Houston Rockets and the New Orleans Pelicans. Trevor Ariza, that's two massive games in a row, 31-5 with 8 triples, 3 assists, 3 steals, 1 block. I touched on it on yesterday's pod, yesterday, that he'd been classified as disappointing, but I think he's still a top 60 player on the year because of what he can do in the categories that don't get as much notice, like 2 threes, 2 steals a game, and he chips in. And when he has big games like this, he blows up. He's available on waiver wise in some leagues, as ridiculous as that might sound. He has to be owned everywhere. He's not losing his role anywhere. He's playing as a stretch four more, and that's obviously helping his game, and he's probably better in that role at this point in his career. I'd really like what Trevor Ariza can do, and to me, he's significantly underrated with what he does in fantasy leagues. James Harden, 35-11-8. Almost his third triple-double in the last 4 games. And Pat Beverley had a nice game, 11-7-3 with 3 triples and 2 steals. Where's Beverley's status for 12-team leagues? Is he just a it-depends-if-it-fits sort of guy?
Yeah, he's a fit guy. If you need threes, you need steals, you're okay with some poor shooting, I think he's a guy that you want to own. But he's for a point guard, he's going to be one of the worst in terms of assists for a starter in the league. So... don't add him if you need assists, but if you need some steals, need some threes, he's certainly a good guy to own there.
Also, Josh Smith, speaking of poor shooting, he went 2 of 11 for 5 points, but had 4 rebounds and 4 assists. But importantly, he played 28 minutes. Terrence Jones played 14, and Clint Capella played 16. What are you doing with Smith?
They like Josh Smith.
Yeah. What are we
they
doing?
They like him a lot.
They do. They obviously do. They trust him. We know what he can do from a fantasy point of view. Throw your percentages out the window, because this is 2 games where he's been under 20% from the field. Throw them out of the window, but you're going to be able to get numbers across the board in rebounds, assists, steals, blocks. He'll hit some threes. He's worth owning if you can absorb the poor shooting, which he is invariably going to deliver. He's going to get minutes. Terrence Jones appears cooked. I'm not stashing Terrence Jones anywhere at this point, unless I'm in a weekly changes league. But in a daily changes league, you can forget about him. And the same feels like it for Capella as well. With Dwight Howard out and he plays 16 minutes, it's not happening for him at the moment either. They're definitely trusting Josh Smith a lot more. Have you picked him up anywhere?
Yeah, I did pick him up on one team. It was a points league, so perfect for that format. You know, you don't have to worry about those percentages.
Yep.
But yeah, he's definitely he's worth adding in leagues, like you said, if you can absorb the, you know, if you are a guy that you own, you know, DeAndre Jordan or Dwight Howard or, you know, these very good field goal percentage guys, you can afford, I think, to take the hit with Smith while also getting the assists, the steals, the blocks that come along with it.
Yep, and Ty Lawson is still not good. 16 minutes for him, 3 points, two assists. He doesn't deserve a spot in probably even 14-team leagues, to be honest.
And I actually saw a stat yesterday. You mentioned Capella that his usage rate is lower with Howard out than it is with Howard.
That makes no sense, but hey, there's a lot of things that don't make sense in the NBA. On to the Pelicans. Tyreke Evans limited to 16 minutes. His knee is a legit issue. He's having an MRI tomorrow. He has barely played 30 minutes in about the last 2 weeks. He's clearly hobbled by it. He was hobbled by it at the start of the season. He missed all that time. There is a distinct chance that we are going to be Tyreke Evans-less for a big chunk of the rest of the season, I would say, Seth. And if someone offers you a deal to take Tyreke Evans off your hands, I'm pretty okay with doing it at this point, because the risk with him is pretty much as high as anybody else in the league at the moment. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. It wouldn't take a lot probably for me to trade him either.
I don't own him anywhere, but it wouldn't take much for me to get rid of him. The good thing is with Evans out, Drew Holiday went bananas. 36 minutes, 32, 6, and 9, 3 steals and 2 threes. And so many people forget how good this guy is. He is legitimately, he was an all-star. He's a top 50 fantasy player. If he stays healthy, he's looking good at the moment, and it's great for him.
The Pelicans did a really good job of managing Holiday's minutes as he worked his way up. I mean, he was playing under 10 and they made it 15 and then no back-to-backs. They really managed it well, and they did the complete opposite with Evans. So it's kind of weird that how well they actually meticulously increased Holiday's minutes and then added the back-to-backs and then, are still bringing him off the bench. And then Evans came back about 3 or 4 weeks sooner than he was supposed to from surgery. And I think the first game he played like 32 minutes.
Yep.
They showed no care in that, and I'm not surprised that he's having issues.
I've just seen come through now, a report saying Blake Griffin may have a broken hand. I'll need to investigate that a little bit more. I don't know what just happened with that.
How did he break his hand? He hasn't played in 3 weeks.
I don't know. I'm going to look at that in a sec, but let's continue to talk Pelicans. Norris Cole went 10-4-4 in 35 minutes. I do not like Norris Cole at all. He played 35 minutes. That's barely replacement level. But with Evans struggling, I think you have to own him and see what happens over the next 2 weeks. He's just not good. He's just not a good player, and I wouldn't be surprised. Tony Douglas should take his minutes, because Cole has got an argument to being one of the worst players in the NBA. Are you adding Cole across the board?
I do think he needs to be owned. I agree with you. He's not a good player. He's more of a defensive guy, but he's playing 35 minutes a game. You can't not own that, especially, if Evans is going to be out and he's going to be starting. I think he has to be owned.
I agree. Back to the Blake Griffin thing, just to interrupt what we're talking about, Mark Stein has tweeted out that ESPN sources have told Ramona Shelburne and I that Blake Griffin has suffered a suspected broken hand in an undisclosed team-related incident. So who do you punch? Josh Smith? Has to be Josh Smith, doesn't it? And then Josh Smith got traded.
Has
to be.
Yeah, I mean, let's just hope it's just in practice or something like that, or weightlifting or something. But, if he did punch someone, it might be Josh Smith.
Has to be Josh Smith.
Who doesn't want to just punch Austin Rivers anyway?
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
You never know.
Well, you know who else is there? Lance Stevenson. So there's a few options. Yeah. So let's I don't know any more details than that. I don't know whether it's actually true at this point, but that could put Blake out for another 4 to 6 weeks. And that's obviously that's an issue, considering he's already missed 3 or 4 weeks at the moment. I don't want to speculate too much, but I don't know. What do you do with Blake Griffin if you don't have an IR spot and he's out for another 4 to 6?
Unfortunately, I own him in a league where we have no ads during the season, so that is rough.
You know, you're in trouble.
We just draft and set weekly lineups, no ads. So that's a big blow for me. But you got to wait and see what the story is. And again, it's sort of a situation of how you are in the standings. If you're in first place and, hey, look, he's been out for a few, few weeks. And if you're still in first place, you've done fine without him. So, hey, maybe you can wait another 6 weeks for the playoffs. That's fine. But if you're struggling and you're losing ground because of it, that's tough. I mean, I think people get so – I'm starting to see the tweets, this for playoffs, or who do you like the rest of the season, and this. And it's becoming more of what place are you in? How are you looking at the standings? What's the rest of your roster look like? What's your schedule look like? Because there's some I see some of these rosters and I'm seeing players in some of these teams and I'm like, why do you own this player? And why you're in seventh place and you own a guy like you own Markieff Morris. There's no reason to own Markieff Morris if you're in seventh place and the playoffs only you only six make it, you know. So this is a player that's hurt and on a team that isn't playing him. And so I don't know. It you gotta look at those type of things with all your players really when it at this point in the season because the All-Star break's, you know, 2 weeks away. It's sneaking up on us, 2.5 weeks away, and then the playoffs are right around the corner. So you gotta start trimming fat and Blake Griffin, unfortunately, if you're a team that's on the outside looking in or barely on the inside, you might be a player that you have to drop if this turns out to be true. This is the second, I think the second injury. Well, he tore his ACL before his rookie season, didn't even play a game. And then I think that 2 years ago, he fractured his back in the summer. Like he gets all these injuries, and not even playing in games.
Hit that elbow sort of infection. Last year, he had an elbow infection that kept him out for
staph infection last year. It's crazy.
One more thing on the Pelicans before we move on. Tony Douglas played 25 minutes, went 18-3-6, and had three triples, a steal, and a block. That's fantastic production. If Tyreek's out, he definitely comes into the conversation as a guy who might be relevant because Drew Holiday's not going to play 36 minutes each night. Douglas might be able to get 25, 26 minutes, and I'll keep saying it, Norris Cole's no good. So Douglas might be able to keep a steady role. I'm not adding him in 12, 10 leagues, but if we're talking deeper, I reckon he's not a bad speculative add because he can put up numbers. He put them up earlier in the season when Holiday was out and they had all, you know, Tyreek was out. He's definitely someone that I think is worth looking at because he can put up the stats. The next game, Seth, the Atlanta Hawks and the Denver Nuggets. Paul Millsap returned from his game off 22-9-3, two steals and a block. They had this game in hand pretty easily. The minutes were spread all over the place. Horford had 18 points and a litany of ones throughout his stat line. Jeff Teague, 26 minutes, 12-10, three steals, three rebounds. Jeff Teague owners would be delirious to see that sort of production from him given how poor he's been. What are you doing with Jeff Teague and with Dennis Schroeder, who still went 15-5-5 in this one in only 19 minutes? They're both must-own players. You're actively getting rid of Teague, or what are you doing?
I mean, honestly, if I could trade either one, sure, if I'm getting decent value. I think Teague has improvement along the way. I mean, this is a guy that was an all-star last year. He's played well the last few years. He started off the season red hot. I think he was a top 30 player in the first few weeks. He's just going through a really bad slump shooting the ball. Hopefully this is a game that gets him out of that. He had a great line tonight and, you know, really dominated Schroeder minutes wise. I'm still standing by Schroeder not being a complete must own guy because as long as Teague is there, he's not going to replace him unless Teague just completely combusts and goes 2-for-10 every game and turns the ball over five times. I still think they're going to bring Schroeder off the bench. And I think that he's had some good games, but he's still not a great shooter, in my opinion, not a good 3-point shooter. And so he'll have some nice games like he had tonight. And if you own him, fine, but I'm not necessarily like dropping a cold player that may just be in a cold spell to pick up Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of putting it. I own him in a couple of leagues. I just want to see what happens over the next 2 weeks. But he fits certain team builds, Schroeder. If you're not punting field goal percentage, he can really hurt there. And he's going to have a few duds mixed in because of the lack of minutes. I still think he should be owned in most places, but it's not necessarily let's own him and hold him for the whole season sort of situation. Kent Bazemore went 9-7-2, had two steals, a block, and a three. A pretty decent night from him in 25 minutes. Onto the Nuggets, the guy I was referring to much earlier in the show when we were talking about players who could put up top 100 value in limited minutes, Nikola Jokic. 18 minutes for him, which is ludicrous in itself, why he only played 18. 15-10, three assists, two steals, and a block. This guy is putting up value like crazy in very, very limited minutes. Mike Malone has said it, I reckon, 20 times this year, how much he loves what Jokic is doing. In the last 2 weeks, Seth, Jokic is playing 20.1 minutes a game. Where would you imagine he is ranked in an 8-category league? Actually, a 9-cat league.
8-category in the last 2 weeks?
Yep, 20 minutes a game.
Are you saying in the last 2 weeks, you're saying?
In the last 2 weeks.
I'd put him in top 30.
Yeah, he's 15th in 20 minutes.
Nice, yeah.
And that's 11.
I know that I write daily fantasy articles on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and he was my – I do value – punt type plays, and he was my value guy today. He's number two among centers in steals over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah,
and he did actually, he picked up two pretty quick fouls tonight, which is why he sat out almost an entire second quarter. So that's why his minutes were a little lower, and then they were trailing by a lot. But yeah, he has a lot of value, and I think that he's still can be had in a lot of leagues. And I think those minutes are going to increase after the All-Star break, because you're going to see some of the other guys either get traded or not get the minutes once they want to play their youngsters.
He's in those last 2 weeks, he's averaging 11.5 and 5, 2.7 assists, which is very underrated for a center, 2 steals, 0.7 blocks, and shooting 52 and 91. And you know, the 91 from the free throw line, he's on 3 attempts, so that's not an insignificant amount of attempts from the free throw line. He has got a huge amount of upside if he was to get minutes. I'm not sure he's not going to get 30 minutes. There's pretty much no chance of that. But he's keeping Yusuf Nurkic out of the rotation. He should be playing a lot more than what Joffrey Lavernier is. He only got 3 minutes extra today, but you said the foul trouble was there. But he should be getting 25, and Lavernier should be getting 5. That's the way it should be working. He has looked fantastic this season, and Malone does love him. He should be owned. I also think Gary Harris should be owned everywhere. He went 15 with 3 triples, 4 steals, and a block. I'm almost convinced that he'll be a top 100 player for the last 2 months of the season. Post All-Star break, I reckon he's going to really turn it on. There's no challenge to his role. He's getting 30 plus minutes every single night, and his offensive game is coming on. His defense is right there. I really like what Gary Harris is doing. Will Barton, 34 minutes. He's been terrible lately, but 21 and 8 with a 3 and 2 steals, exactly what his owners would have been wanting. Are you looking to capitalize on this and maybe sell him off, or do you think that he can regain that top 50 value he had earlier this season?
I don't see any reason why he can't. I mean,
apart from the fact that he's not a good player.
I keep getting I've got a lot of tweets in the last 2 weeks or so. Gallinari back is killing Barton, but Gallinari missed 6 games. Barton was putting up fourth round value for the first 2 months of the season. Gallinari missed 6 games.
The guy who allowed Barton to really go big was the absence of Gary Harris.
Yeah, yeah, and he was out as well. Well, Barton's not going to put up 25 points a game like he was a few weeks ago, but can he put up 15, 7 with a 3 and a couple steals? Yeah, I think so, and I think he's worth holding on to. I mean, I think that window to sell really high has passed. Yep. So you may as well just hold on. You know, he should get minutes. I mean, there are some frustrating games where he doesn't, but you can see with 35 minutes tonight, I mean, 21-8, 2 steals. That's a great line. That's a guy that, can help you on your team, and you don't necessarily need to trade if you're not going to get something equal in return.
That's fair enough. Ken Faried only played 17 minutes. He's still dealing with that groin issue. 4 and 5 for him. I'm not the biggest Kenneth Faried fan. Emmanuel Mudiay had 10 points and 6 assists and brutalized your percentages as he is wont to do, and that's just what's going to happen. And if you're not prepared for that, then that's pretty much your bad luck, because that's exactly what he is going to do on pretty much all occasions. So don't be surprised when he goes out there and shoots 4 of 13 from the field. The next game is the Detroit Pistons and the Utah Jazz. Brandon Jennings back to earth, 1 point. 4 assists and a steal. Is there any situation outside of a weekly changes league that you are stashing Brandon Jennings for 12-team formats?
I actually own him in one of the leagues we're in together, but that may change pretty soon. It was sort of I already had lost the matchup last week and picked him up. One of those like, well, maybe he gets traded on Monday to the Knicks or something, and he didn't. But outside of an injury, I mean, he's had some sparks, some flashes of some big games. He's just not getting the minutes, and he's not shooting the ball well. I don't think he's worth owning unless it's a much deeper league.
Yep, I agree with that. Reggie Jackson had 29, 3, and 4 with 3 triples, and Ersan had 16 and 8 with 2 triples for him as well. Andre Drummond, not his best night, 7 and 6 with 2 steals, 3 of 9 from the field and 1 of 10 from the free throw line. We do not care about the free throw percentage for him because you know that's the case. The problem is it keeps him off the court when he gets hacked, and then he adds by only hitting 3 of 9 from the field. He is in a massive slump at the moment. If you're in a punt free throw situation, I would be seeing if I can get him at a real cheap rate, because his recent form hasn't been good. Now, that might continue as teams continue to hack him. That might be an ongoing thing. But I reckon you can have him probably at the cheapest you could have had him all season at the moment. What are you taking away from Drummond at the moment?
Yeah, I think mentally the free throws are affecting him, and I don't think he's a guy that's taking the benchings well. But I agree with Van Gundy. You can't have a guy out there that's 1 for 10 or missing 23 free throws on the night. It's just embarrassing, really. I mean, people want to talk about this guy being one of the best centers in the game, and I'm sorry. I mean, he has the tools, but if your coach can't trust you to be in the game in crunch time, you're not one of the best players at any position in the game. He's put up some big numbers this year, but just stay after the game and work on your free throws. It's ridiculous. This is as bad as I've ever seen it. I mean, even Dwight Howard in his bad years was never this bad. This is bad. This is the worst free throw shooting I've ever seen before.
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope went 12-7, and Marcus Morris had 2 points with 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal on 1 of 9 shooting. Marcus Morris is not a must-own player to me. Rudy Gobert had 17-17 for the Jazz with a steal and a block, and Derek Favors returned finally after being day-to-day for over a month. He played 20 minutes off the bench and went 14-5. He looks like he's back to business. He closed the game out. All good if you own Derek Favors. If you picked up Trey Lyles, if you picked up Trevor Booker, that little run is done. Now, Gordon Hayward, even with Favors back, still played 37 minutes, went 22-5-5, and had a bad shooting night, so I'm not too worried. Not too worried about Hayward in that sense. And Rod Hood was good as well. 23-2-2, 2 steals and 6 triples. So back to business as usual for most of the Jazz players. They didn't get the win, but Favors back is going to be huge for them making that playoff push. I don't think there's really much that we need to really look at too much here, apart from Trey Burke missed all 8 of his shots.
Nope.
The next game was the double overtime Charlotte versus Sacramento game. We've talked Troy Daniels already. Spencer Hawes starting in place of Cody Zeller, 18-7, 4 triples and a steal. He is a great short-term add. He is the guy that you add over Frank Kaminsky, even though Kaminsky was playing a lot better before Zeller went down. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Jeremy Lin played 50 minutes, went 20 points, 7 rebounds, 11 assists and 2 threes. I've been on the Jeremy Lin must-own bandwagon pretty much all season. I don't think you can really argue with that at this point. Yes, his value, he's not playing 50 minutes when Nick Batum comes back, but Jeremy Lamb is not an impediment to him getting 29 minutes a night. I think that Lin has to be owned in pretty much all situations, especially if you're punting field goal percentage. Do you have an alternate take on Lin?
I do not. I agree with you.
And Kemba had 24, 4, and 8 with 4 steals, a block, and a 3. And killed your field goal percentage, 5 of 25. That's a vintage Kemba Walker. Don't think you need to be too concerned about that. On to the Kings. Double-double from Rajon Rondo and only had 7 points. 10 rebounds, 20 assists, and a 3. It's almost what you expect from him these days. And he shared the court a lot with Darren Collison, who went 15-3-6 with 2 steals and a 3. We haven't seen that very often lately. Collison's minutes have been quite limited. We know he's got top 50 upside, Collison, but it's all going to depend on a Rondo injury. He's someone who much prefer stashing over a Brandon Jennings sort of player, because he is going to play minutes at times, but to me, he's not necessarily a must-own sort of player. Rudy Gay came back from his heel injury, played 41 minutes, and now has got a scratched eyeball that caused him to leave the game at the end. 20-9 for him, a 3 and 2 blocks. If you've got an open spot, Omri Caspi might be an add if you're going to see Gay miss a couple of games. What do you think of Caspi otherwise, though, who went 13-8 here with 3 triples in 32 minutes? Is he a 12-team league guy if everyone's healthy?
I still think he is, but he's definitely losing a little bit of steam from what he was doing a few weeks ago.
And a lot of that's because Willie Cauley-Stein is playing a stack of minutes, 38 minutes for him here, only 9-9, but still 9 rebounds, a steal, a block. He has to be owned in basically every league. Do you agree?
Again, another one of these guys that he needs to be owned, but I personally am not owning him. I don't, you know, if you need rebounds, you need some blocks, but I see him as a very similar type of player to like maybe a Tyson Chandler, where he could get you 2 points and 13 rebounds and maybe a couple blocks if that's what you need. But the score, he's never gonna have big scoring nights with Cousins and Gay and all those guys there, and I think he's still, you know, rounding into a better real life player than he is a fantasy player.
The last game of the night was the San Antonio Spurs and the Golden State Warriors, and this game was over remarkably quickly. The Warriors won by 30. The minutes on both teams were spread out. We don't really get any sort of indication of anything to do fantasy-wise. The odd thing to me looking at the Spurs box score, Seth, is that not one player took double-digit shot attempts. The most shots was Kyle Anderson, who took 9. It seems a little odd to me that Kawhi Leonard only took 6 shots. He still went 16-5-2 with 2 steals, but this game was... They blew him out very, very early, the Warriors. So looking at all these numbers here, I don't think there's much to really gain from delving too much into what the Spurs can do. Danny Green, though, are you owning him in any standard leagues anymore?
No, I am not. Yep. I think that ship sailed a long time ago. I still see some leagues where he's owned and not as a streamer. I'm in some leagues where guys have drafted him and owned him all year, and I don't know how they're still doing that when I see much better players on the waiver wire. So, yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things, chalk it up as a loss, whatever round you took him in, and that's it. He's just not, you know, treat him like Ty Lawson. pretty much. You drafted him, it didn't work out, and get rid of him.
The Warriors, Steph Curry had 37, including 6 triples in just 28 minutes, had 5 steals as well. A big night from him. Draymond, 11, 9, and 6 with 3 steals. And again, they were able to spread their minutes very, very thinly across every player on the roster. So, yeah, the most minutes were Steph, who got 28. And Klay Thompson played 25. Harrison Barnes he fouled out in his 21 minutes. Nothing that really needs to be said too much apart from that they're pretty good. Seth, we are going to take a quick break now, and then we'll be back to talk DFS for Tuesday.
This is the part with just the guitar. While we wait on the bass and drums, I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. Me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus lets you know you can't see what I see.
You know what I forgot to do earlier on, Seth? I'm going to do it now. I forgot to do the perfect DFS lineup of the day. So I'm going to bring it up on the screen now. This would have been the best score you could have got on FanDuel. Let's have a look at it now. Jrue Holiday at 54.7 and Jeremy Lin was the other point guard at 41.9. I've talked about both of those guys. Jrue was obviously boosted by the fact that Tyreek Evans was out. Jeremy Lin got the bonus of playing 50 minutes. So both of those things were things that were pretty hard to predict, but both of them actually looked good before the game anyway in their matchups. Jim Harden at 62.2, he's been absolutely rolling, and Troy Daniels at 36.4. Well, good luck putting him into a lineup. I don't think anyone would have done that with a huge amount of confidence. Same with Jeff Green at 45.1 and Trevor Ariza at 46.5, although Ariza had been playing pretty strongly and he looked like he was in a good matchup, and I think his salary was only at 5,000, so he was a guy you could have, you know, pretty reasonably had into a lineup. The power forwards, Pau Gasol, 44, and Tristan Thompson, 36.4. The move of Thompson back to the starting lineup really boosted his DFS value, so that enabled him to be used in lineups. And, of course, the center, you have to pay $11,000 for Boogie, but when you're getting 75 points a night, it's not really a terrible investment, is it? And that lineup would have given you 443 points. Obviously, a pretty big score there, Seth. Did you have any DFS lineups in today?
I did, yeah.
How'd you go?
I didn't do very well today. I did have a lot of those guys you just put up there, but I just it didn't piece together. I unfortunately did leave Boogie out of my lineups. I had him in, and then said, "Man, I can't squeeze anybody else in because he's so expensive," and that really killed me right there.
Exactly, that salary was so big that I was talking yesterday. Go, $11,000 so much when you could have put a guy like Cauley Stein in at $4,000. There was another cheap center that I was looking at as well who was like, you know, $3,900 or something, where I was like, oh, maybe you can use one of these guys. But obviously getting 75 from Boogie ended up pretty impressively. The double overtime did help in that sense. Let's talk about these games for Tuesday. The first one is the Phoenix Suns and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers are favored by 3, unbelievably. But maybe, well, not unbelievably to me, maybe unbelievably to some, that they are favored by 3. The total is 204.5. John Lua is doubtful for the Suns. Markieff Morris is probable. There is no Brandon Knight in this one. So the best value play on the board to me, almost for the whole night, is Archie Goodwin at 4,100. He put up 35.2 points in his last game. He's averaging 24 across the last three in 33 minutes at 4,100. It's real hard to go past him, and he's got a matchup against the Sixers. Do you see any reason not to use Goodwin, aside from the fact that if you're in a tournament, everyone's going to be using him?
Besides that, no.
Yeah, he's everything points to him having a big game. I really like Devin Booker at 4,500. I like PJ Tucker at 4,500. These guys have all got really positive matchups. They've got roles that should be relatively consistent. Booker's averaging 40 minutes in his last three. PJ Tucker's averaging 30, and that includes a game when he was kneed in the sternum by Kawhi and forced him to leave after about 5 minutes. He's basically a 38-minute guy on most of these nights as well. They've got tremendous value, these players. Now, the other guys who have been playing well for the Suns lately, Tyson Chandler, who put up almost 57 in his last game, and Alex Len, who put up 35. Does the return of Markieff Morris make you steer clear of those guys, or are you still okay with using them, given they're both at sub-5,000 salaries?
Yeah, those are still good value. I do prefer Len, but that's good value there.
Len is, and look, the matchup's fantastic for them both as well. Len had 35 in his last game, 4,700. He's averaging 30 over the last three. Tyson Chandler's averaging 39. Both of those guys are a pretty decent option. There's a stack of center options that are going to be useful to use in Tuesday's slate. You've got a lot of different ways to go. On the Sixers side of things, Robert Covington. We talk about the Suns guys having good matchups. You know, Covington goes against the Suns wing defense, which isn't good. He's only at 5,100. He's averaging 29 across his last five. He dropped 34 in the last game. Yes, there's potential for him to have a stinker, but he's been really, really consistent lately over his last four or five games. His confidence is back. He's playing big minutes. Brett Brown is going back to him. Is he someone that you're interested in using?
Yeah, I think so. And I think this is a really nice game to stack some of these teams, some of these players, because they really all have pretty nice salaries.
Ish Smith at 6,900, he had a bad game in the last one, but you almost can't find a friendlier matchup than going up against the Suns' backcourt, and he is a 33-point average guy across his last five. Jahlil Okafor at 6,400, I reckon he comes into play as well as a sort of a mid-price center option. He didn't have the greatest timeout in the last game, but we know what he can do. He should be able to get you 30 points, and you should be able to feel comfortable that he's going to give you 30 points. What about Nerlens Noel at 6,400? If you're taking someone at 6,400, are you taking Noel or are you taking Okafor?
Noel.
Okay, I can see it. To me, they're a toss-up. I would probably lean Okafor, but they're pretty close to me. I'm definitely not using Markieff Morris if he plays. Anyone else that you like in this matchup?
I like Isaiah Cannon a little bit in this one.
Yeah,
I think he's a nice pump play there.
He's got a good matchup. He's at 3,800. It's a pretty nice play. He's probably not a cash game option, but in a tournament, there's definitely something to like with him. The next game has another couple of guys that are interesting, the Los Angeles Clippers and the Indiana Pacers. It is a pick'em at the moment. The total is 208.5. The big one we need to watch out for here is Jan Mahinmi, who is still questionable with that ankle. If he is out, it is all aboard the Miles Turner train. He is priced at 4,900. He is basically a lock for 30 points at the moment, it feels like, every night that he plays. If Mahinmi is playing, does that steer you clear of Turner?
No, I don't think so. I think it dampens the excitement a little bit, but I think he's still a good play. I mean, he's still a good play while he's at that price. I don't think they're going to all of a sudden play Turner 15 minutes because Mahimi's back. I think they may start trimming down Mahimi's minutes a little bit. I mean, you can't deny what Turner's been doing in the last few games, and I think Frank Vogel is smart enough to know that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that I'm not concerned if Mahinmi does come back. Paul George is at 8,600, so the salary's come down. He was at 10,000 at one point earlier this season. He's taking on the Clippers, who are a slight negative in terms of their ease against small forward, power forward, which George plays a split between those two. He's averaging 35 across his last three or across his last five games. Is he someone that you're interested in at 8,600?
It's a little expensive.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
Yeah.
I don't think that... Look, he's probably going to give you 30, 35 points, but it's not quite enough at 8,600. You want him to be pushing big, and I don't really see him having an explosion here. The only thing I was going to say, if this was in Los Angeles, you think he's going home, but it's in Indiana, so forget that line of thought completely. JJ Redick at 5,200 hasn't quite been doing it lately, but he does have upside, so he's a tournament sort of player. And what about Paul George, who's been red hot? He's averaging 46 across his last five. He's priced at 10,100. What do you make of Paul George here? Do you think this is a matchup that's worth using? The Pacers have been relatively good against point guards. You're spending up 10,000 for Chris Paul. Is it something you are targeting?
I think if you're going to go one big point guard, and you don't want to spend quite as much on, save a little bit as opposed to going with Westbrook, I think it's not a bad move.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, though you could totally go with Lillard, save money there, and go with Lillard against a team that just played a double overtime game on back-to-backs. So
that's a team who's already really good value to play against, being the Sacramento Kings. So Lillard, there's quite a few high-priced point guard options that have got nice matchups, like Chris Paul here, Westbrook, who you discussed, Lillard. There's a few options, but it's not a horrible move to go with Chris Paul at all. I think it makes a lot of sense. The next game is the Wizards and the Raptors. The Raptors are favored by 8.5. The total is 205 in this one. Bradley Beal has already been ruled out with his concussion issue, so there's going to be no Bradley Beal here. I don't think we're going to see Chris Humphries, but I don't think we really care about that either. With Bradley Beal out, Garrett Temple is going to see 30-plus minutes. Now, this is not a positive matchup for him. Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan have been really good defensively. He's priced at 4,800, which feels a little bit high, but we've seen him have 30-point games. Is he strictly reserved for tournaments, or do you have some faith in him in a cash game setup?
I think there's a decent amount of faith in cash game. Like you said, he'd been playing pretty well up until when Beal came back and even was still getting minutes. I mean, he was 0 for 7, I think, last night. So
he wasn't
good. But he had decent minutes. What's that?
He wasn't good in the last one, no.
No. So, but before that was putting up pretty consistent fantasy scoring outputs. So, at that price, I mean, I'd rather spend a little bit more on him than like Ramon Sessions or Nene or, a guy like that. But certainly some value there. But again, I try to avoid guys on back-to-backs if I can. So I don't know. It depends. It depends if he starts. Because if he starts and the Wizards are behind, which they should be, like given the 8-point spread, he won't get the garbage time minutes.
I think there's no doubt that he starts.
What's that?
I think there's no doubt that he starts. Oh, I can't see what else they're going to do.
It may be a little bit risky because they could be behind, mid-third quarter and then just throw out their reserves. And if he's a starter, he's not going to be part of that group.
I'll throw this out there. His last five games, he's averaged 29 minutes a game, so pretty good amount of minutes, 18.8 points. It's not so good. Yes, his usage will go up without Beal there, but I'm not all that keen on using him. In fact, there's not many players in this game that I am overly keen on using. Kyle Lowry at 8,800, that's pretty expensive. As good as he's been at 8,800, we're talking that's more than Paul George, and I probably have less faith in Kyle Lowry returning value than I do George against the Wizards. DeMar DeRozan at 8,400. That's one where I'm a little bit more interested in using if he's going to be faced up against Garrett Temple. So that's a more of a positive matchup for DeRozan. But at 8,400, it feels expensive, but he's averaging 40 points the last five. I have more confidence in using DeRozan than I do in using Kyle Lowry. What are your thoughts with those two?
I do like DeRozan more. Yeah.
What about Johnny Wall? He's at 10,000. Wasn't good today. He's been okay the last few games, but nothing spectacular. He hasn't fared all that well against Lowry so far this season. He's probably, we talk about high-priced point guards, he's well behind Paul, Lillard, and Westbrook to me. Where else are we? Marcin Gortat at 7,200. He's a fine guy. I think he's a pretty solid cash game player. And Jonas Valanciunas is now at 6,500. I reckon he's in a really decent spot as well. He's averaging 33.5 across the last three games. And 6,500 is not a restrictive salary. So I'm okay with using both Valanciunas and Gortat. I think either one of those guys is nice, safe cash game value. Do you have any preference with those two players?
Yeah, I think almost on almost any night, I'll always prefer Gortat over Valanciunas.
Valanciunas is averaging more than him over the last three games, though, in less minutes, in seven less minutes.
Still Gortat for me.
Fair enough. The next game is the Oklahoma City Thunder and the New York Knicks. There is no spread for this one. Carmelo Anthony is dealing with some knee issues, which obviously is a bit of a worry for Carmelo Anthony fans, New York Knicks fans, Carmelo Anthony owners. He is dealing with some knee soreness. He says he's going to play, so they're not too concerned about that. Steven Adams was initially ruled out for the next two games. He's been upgraded to doubtful. Still means he's probably not going to play. And Andre Robertson is now out for the next 3 weeks. So that means there's one less zero in the starting lineup for the Oklahoma City Thunder. With Adams out, $4,700 for Enes Kanter. How does that feel to you?
That feels pretty good to me. Although, I mean, it's not a great matchup. That's the only problem.
No, it's not.
So I'd rather there are some other guys that are cheaper on the OKC side, like Deion Waiters, you know, now with Robertson out and maybe even Campaign or, you know, those couple of guys, and I'd rather get on Kanter.
Yeah, look, they're good punt options. $3,700 for Payne, $3,900 for Deion Waiters. They haven't really produced much lately, a 15-point average for both those guys over the last five, but they've clearly got 25-point upside if they get enough run. So both those guys are worth looking at. I do like Russell Westbrook here. He is priced at $10,600, but I'm not really concerned that the Jose Calderon defense is going to slow him down a huge amount. You feel like he's a lock for 40, 45 points pretty much every night. His lowest score in his last five is just 38. So you're getting pretty high floor from him. And, you know, 50 is always in the discussion with Russell Westbrook. I think this is a great spot for him. He's a guy that I do put ahead of Chris Paul and ahead of Damian Lillard if you're spending up big on point guards. But all of those guys are in pretty nice spots. Serge Ibaka has been disappointing. He's now priced under 6,000. He's at 5,800. He hasn't even been returning that value, though, of late, with just a 22.5-point average across his last five. Have you got any faith in him?
He's hard to roster right now in DFS.
What about your boy Aaron Aflalo? He's at 5,000. How much do you love him?
You know, honestly, I mean, if Carmelo doesn't play, sure. I mean, obviously, Derek Williams, I'd rather have him if Melo doesn't play. Yeah, there aren't really a lot of guys I like in this game on the Knicks side of things.
No, look, you're not playing Melo even if he does play. Calderon, no. Aflalo, maybe if Melo is out. There isn't a huge amount to like. What about Durant? He's at 10,200. He's got 46 or 47-point average across the last five. He feels like he's in a pretty good spot, especially if Melo is out as well. You'd feel he's a lock for 45 points as well. What about the boy on your t-shirt?
Percentages.
He is at 6,900. What do you do with him? He's averaging less than 29 his last five.
Yeah, he's another guy I'm probably not throwing out there. This game just has a weird feeling to it. I'm staying away from Knicks guys. If Melo doesn't play, I think Derek Williams is a solid guy to throw out there, but other than that, I'd rather roll with the Thunder or move on to another game.
Derek Williams put up 42.8 in his last game in 34 minutes. He's definitely someone to look at. If Melo is out, he should be rostered in most lineups, I would have thought, if Melo is out. He could be a stinker because he's been terrible his entire career, except for this season, but I reckon he's in a really good spot here. The Miami Heat and the Brooklyn Nets is the next one we look at. No, Goran Dragic is not going to play most likely. He's listed as questionable because that's what the Heat listed him at, but I don't think we're going to see him. Regardless, I'm not rostering him. I'm not rostering Beno Udrih. I'm not rostering Tyler Johnson, regardless of the status of any of these guys. In fact, there's not many players in this game that have a massive amount of appeal. Dwayne Wade, a little bit at 6,800. Brooklyn's terrible against shooting guards. He did put up 45 in today's game, but Dwayne Wade on a back-to-back, it does not really strike me as a great move. What do you see with him?
Brooklyn does provide some good points to the opposition, but the price, like you said, it may be best to stay away on the back-to-back and going on the road. So I agree with you there, but there's definitely some value to be had in this game, in my opinion.
Chris Bosh at 7,600, would you say he's one of those value players? I think that he is going up against Thad Young. I think that he can be, you know, a really solid cash game guy to have a look at.
Yeah, I do. I do.
What at the Brooklyn point guard situation? Donald Sloan at 4,500 put up 24 in the last game. Shane Larkin at 41 put up 30.6. So both guys exceeding value. I don't trust either of them to do it against Miami. Someone might, but to me, I'm restricting them only to tournaments. And even then, it's a bit of a stretch. How do you view those guys?
Yeah, I don't trust either in this matchup. And I just don't trust either overall. You never know which way it's going to go. So it's like flipping a coin. Well, I'll play Sloan and Larkin gets the minutes, or I play Larkin and Sloan bounces back. So just one of those situations that I'd rather just avoid completely.
I agree with that. Brook Lopez, if Hassan Whiteside is out, he gets extra appeal to me. He's at 8,300. He did drop 51 in the last game against the Thunder when Steven Adams was out. So if Whiteside is out and he's got to take on Amari Stoudemire, I think that he can go close to getting 50 again. So he definitely comes into play as a high price center option. How do you view Lopez against this Heat defense?
Well, if Whiteside plays, I think it's not as good of an option.
I agree with that.
But
anyone else you see as value in this one?
Yeah, I think Joe Johnson has a little bit of value there. If you're, in a tournament, I think at that price, and if Udre does start and Dragic isn't back, I think that he has a very good matchup.
He does have a great matchup. He was terrible against the Bulls today, and that was also a good matchup going up against Derrick Rose and Aaron Brooks. But he becomes a nice tournament option if Goran Dragic is out. The next game is the Magic and the Bucks. The Bucks are favored by 5.5. The Magic have been terrible lately. The total, or the Bucks haven't been much better. The total is 195.5 points. OJ Mayo is questionable with his hamstring issue. That's really the only injury to have a look at here. Aaron Gordon at 4,300 hasn't really done a massive amount lately, but the matchup's beautiful for him, and his upside is there, and you hope that he can get maybe 30 minutes. That would be good, and then we could see actually a decent night from him. Do you view him as a tournament option, a cash game option, a stay-away option? How do you see Aaron Gordon here?
I think he's actually worthy in both formats.
I agree with that.
I think at that price.
I agree. I don't agree with myself. I think Nikola Vucevic is also valuable at both. At 7,800, he gets a really nice matchup going up against Greg Monro. He's averaging 39 across his last three. He's blocking shots now. I think he can have his way with the Bucks here. I think he's in a really nice spot. And I'd be looking for Victor Oladipo to have a bit of a bounce back as well. Despite his poor performance today, he's still averaging 33 points across his last three. He's only at 6,200. You feel like 30 points is not going to be a stretch for him to get. So I'm okay with using Oladipo as well today. Or Tuesday, whatever day we're looking at.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of the more fun games in terms of Big's fantasy numbers, so I don't have a problem with that.
All these guys, Giannis Antetokounmpo, he's at 7,300. He's got significant upside here. Toby Harris at 6,000. He's giving you 30 points basically every night, which at 6,000 is 5x. It's bang on the dot. You feel you're going to get 30 points from him most nights. He has history with the Bucks. He's got a consistent role. I think he's a good option. I really like Jabari Parker here as well at 5,300. He hasn't been doing a massive amount, but that salary is not high. A 25 average across his last five is almost 5x as it is. Plus, he gets the benefit of taking on the Magic front court, which is not good defensively. So I think that we could be seeing a 30-point outing here from Jabari Parker. So maybe he's more of a tournament option, but I'm okay rolling him out there in both sort of formats as well. Michael Carter-Williams, how do you view him? 6,700. He's definitely been up and down, but his up is pretty high. But at 6,700, that feels a bit prohibitive to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem. If you're going with, trying to go middle range with point guards, maybe you go Michael Carter-Williams and then go with, D'Angelo Russell or something like that, and then, stack up on your bigs. I don't have a problem with that. But I wouldn't be adding him to a guy like Lillard or Westbrook or Chris Paul.
Couple other guys who are fairly high salaries but have been producing nicely. Chris Middleton's at 7,400 now, but he is averaging 36 points across his last five. And Greg Monro is at 8,000 and he's averaging 36 across his last five. So both those guys have been relatively consistent and decent floors as well. I think both of them are in play in cash games. They're not probably the best options on the board, but it really depends on how your salary is looking. I think that they're both relatively solid guys who should get pretty much close to value that they need to get. How do you view those two players?
Who was it? Monroe and
Middleton.
I didn't hear a second. Sorry, cut out.
Chris Middleton.
Monroe's just been on fire. So it's tough not to play Monroe against that magic back front court you were talking about.
Yeah, there's definitely a benefit there.
Yeah, for 600 more, I know they play different positions, but I'd rather have Monroe.
Yep, that's fair enough. At the next game is the Sacramento Kings and the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers are favored by 2.5 because obviously it's a back-to-back double overtime from the Kings. They're traveling on the road. This is not looking great for them, but still, Willie Cauley-Stein at 4,300. I think that you still have to look at him at that sort of salary. He was a little bit down, only putting up 21 today, but at 4,300, he is pretty hard to ignore. What do you do with Boogie, though? 11,200, almost 60-point average across his last five. Is he someone that you want to spend 11,200 on?
Man, at this point, it's getting tough not to play him. So, and despite the back to back, the double overtime, I feel like if you don't play him, you're setting yourself behind everybody else.
Yeah, that's how it felt like last season with Westbrook when he went through that stretch. No matter what salary it was, if you don't play him, you're gonna end up losing because everyone else is gonna have him, and then you're going to be you're gonna look foolish. But it's not an ideal situation. Double overtime, back to back on the road. But at the moment, he doesn't really care for not ideal situations. Damian Lillard's at 8,800. We touched on him before. He put up 44.5 against the Lakers in only 29 minutes. This is not a tough matchup for him. He is definitely someone's in play. And I like CJ McCollum as well. He's at 77. The same sort of things apply to him as they do to Lillard. A backcourt who, is, at the best of times, allows fantasy points. And now they're tired and traveling. I think McCollum has pretty nice value here as well. What do you take of the Kings players? We talked Cousins already, but guys like Caspi, Collison, Gay, Rondo, do you have any sort of interest in those players?
If they fit into your lineup at the end, a guy like Caspi and maybe Collison, if you need one more guy, there's worse options out there. As far as Portland though, I like Mason Plumlee as well.
I do too.
To take advantage of a fatigue back front court.
I'd also want to have a look at Myers Leonard in the tournament. He's under 4,000. He's at 3,900, so that's not a huge amount. If he gets hot and hits four threes, and you've almost reached your value right there. It's not for cash games. And a similar thing for Ed Davis, who is averaging over 20 points in his last five, but they're worth throwing out there and seeing what they can do. Like, Davis has had a 30-point game in his last five, and the matchup is already positive. And with the extra toll on these front court guys, maybe they can do something a little bit special, but they're not really reliable enough for cash games, I don't think. The last game of the night, the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers at 7.5 the Mavericks are 7.5-point favorites, and the total is 201.5 points. Zaza Pachulia is doubtful, so how many shares of Salah Mejri are you having?
All of them.
Yeah, he's at 3,900, and he's
right. You almost have. Well, if you go with him, you can't really go with Cousins. So
it makes you want to. It makes you want to go cheap at center and then play like Westbrook, Lillard, or the two big name, or Chris Paul as big name point guards, and think that you can get 7x value out of Mejri as a backup. He's only played 4 or 5 games this season, but when he's got a start, he's basically 25, 26 points every time. And he's shown over his last three games that he can be a really useful fantasy player. Plus, he's playing the Lakers. Like, what bigger boost can you get as a center than playing against the Lakers? I say he could do damage, but if he gets 30 points and he's 3,900, it's a tremendous start to your lineup. I really like, this is assuming that Rick Carlisle doesn't just bench him and play JaVale McGee 30 minutes. I don't think that's happening, but that's a possibility. There's a lot to like here on the Mavericks side of things. I think Wes Matthews at 5,100 is appealing. Darren Williams coming off a bad game at 5,900 against the Lakers has got a great value on him as well. And if you want to be sneaky, JJ Barea at minimum salary hasn't done much lately, but the game's out of hand. Maybe he gets 24 minutes. Devin Harris is looking like he's going to be out. He could find 20 minutes and find 25 fantasy points, and that might be enough in a tournament. Definitely not a cash game option, though. Is there anything you like on the Lakers side of things?
I mentioned before, I do like D'Angelo Russell. Still pretty cheap. This minute he's starting to look, you know, keep improving every game. I guess Julius Randle maybe.
Larry Nance is due to be back in this one though, so that makes me steer a little bit clear of Randle.
Who? Oh, right, Nance is back. Yeah. Oh yeah, good point. Yeah, maybe then just Russell. That's about it, I guess. It's just hard with these Lakers.
The other guy you got to pay attention to is Chandler Parsons, who's averaging over 42 his last three games. He's at 6,400. He's in a real groove. Plus, it's the Lakers, defense-wise. On the wings, there's not a lot happening there. He's a guy that I do really like. And, Lakers guy, there's no one. I don't mind Russell, but he's being ridiculously limited, and I don't know why. He's only averaging 23 points over the last five, and at 5,200, look, I know he can go big, but I'm probably not going to be trusting him in a cash game format, unfortunately, because he can put up some pretty nice value. Seth, I'm just going to run through my top plays of the day, bring them up on the screen. There we go. At point guard, Archie Goodwin, 4,100, Ish Smith, 69, and Russell Westbrook, 10,600. Shooting guards, Devin Booker, 45, Wes Matthews, 51, and CJ McCollum, 77. Small forwards, PJ Tucker, 45, Bob Cove at 5,100, and Kevin Durant at 10,200. Power forwards, Miles Turner, 49, Jabari Parker, 53, and Chris Bosh, 76. Centers, Salah Mejri at 39, Jahlil Okafor, 64, and DeMarcus Cousins at 11,200. Anything else you want to Anything else you want to add before we sign off, Seth?
Not really. Just happy Australia Day.
Thank you.
I learned a lot about that today with all the other guys out there.
Yeah, I saw you responding to tweets from us Aussie guys talking about Australian basketball and joining in. But yes, it is Australia Day today. It's winding down here now. Seth, remind everyone A, where they can find you on Twitter, and B, where they can find your writing, and C, in honor of Australia Day, how about you do it all in an Australian accent?
Oh God, I had a feeling this was coming. Oh man.
Just give me
all right.
Okay, go.
Wait,
go.
No, what?
give us your Twitter handle.
I already messed it up.
Yeah, go again. Take two.
I see. You know, I think what's going to happen is I'm going to cross it between British and like Scottish, and it's all going to sound like it's Jamaican.
All right, I'll let you off this time. Just give us your Twitter handle and where they can find your writing.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Seth the Sportsman. Is that okay? No,
it was terrible.
SETHDASPORTSMAN. I'm on there all day long. Follow me. I answer all questions, any sport really, but definitely all your basketball questions. You can find my writing at thefantasyfix.com. My DFS writing I talked about before, Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays at fantasydraft.com. And my rankings at fantasypros.com. And then you can check myself out and Josh and all the other guys at allstar5.com. And of course, always love being on the show. And I'm usually on here a couple times a month at least. And again, happy Australia Day to all the Aussies down under.
Oh, that was a little bit better than before. I'll give you a pass on that on this wonderful Australia Day. Seth, thank you for coming on. Follow Seth on Twitter, Seth the Sportsman. You can follow me at @RedRock_Bball and Basketball Monster, which is at Basque Monster, for all your late breaking injury news, lineup changes, all that sort of information. Of course, the website is basketballmonster.com, and there's also hardwoodparoxysm.com. And a big shout out to Keith from the Fast Break Breakfast podcast, who's now joined the Hardwood Paroxysm podcast network. Keith's a guy that I met over at Summer League last year. I had a good chat to him. He gave me a great Phil Jackson How's It Going t-shirt, which I was very appreciative of. And now good to see his podcast is joining up with mine at Hardwood Paroxysm. So Keith and the boys over at Fast Break Breakfast. Congratulations to you guys. Seth, we are done here. Thank you for coming on once again.
Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.